Ladies and gentlemen, you are listening and are connected to Branson Podcast Network, a great home where the Ozarks comes to talk. This is the Heart of the Emergency Worker podcast series, and this is one of your hosts of two, Josh Grisham. And of course, the Heart of the Emergency Worker podcast series here on Branson Podcast Network is powered and presented by Arvest Bank. And of course, if you know a hero right here across the Ozarks and you want their story to be told, go to Arvest Bank Cares. The Heart of the Emergency Worker podcast, the nomination form is right there at the top of the page. We welcome you into this new episode. I am Josh Grisham, and of course, my new co-host on the series. This is her second episode, the lovely and amazing Miss Melissa Box. Welcome back, my dear, and congratulations. One episode in, this is number two for you.
Yes, I'm very excited today. This weather's got me a little stir crazy, but really... really wanted to get out and meet our guests today.
No doubt about it. We've got a little bit of a warming trend in Ozark Mountain Country, depending upon when you are listening to this episode and series. And what a delight it has been, Melissa, for us to get behind the mic and to share these powerful and impactful stories. The nomination process is very easy to do. We always encourage people out there to do that. And so far, what we have seen, there are family members, there are friends, there are businesses and industry leaders that are taking the time to fill out that form. Once that's done, a story comes here to the studio, and we get a chance to present it. So very, very cool.
Yes, very, very awesome.
What I will say is, when I was reading through the bio, and this, the emails come down to me here on the show, a young man that is here that we are going to get into and talk about his life and his career and his decision to say yes in the emergency sector, I just want to frame this up for you guys before we introduce him. Full-time fireman for the city of Branson. He spends his time also working for Taney County Ambulance and Western Taney County Fire. So this young man is not one to rest on his laurels, a very, very busy guy, and we're going to find out how he pulls it all together. So I welcome into this episode of the Heart of the Emergency Worker podcast series, Dalton Pennington. Dalton, welcome to the studio and welcome to this podcast series. Yes.
Thank you for having me.
So, Dalton, you and I, we were spending some time, you, me, and Melissa, we were trying to figure out who nominated you, and we don't have a name, we don't have an identity on this, but I will say this, you've been inspired, you've been listening to some of the series there, and of course, you referenced Josh Beam, who is a prior guest of ours on the series, and he got a chance to come in and tell his story, and today, my friend in the series, it is your turn. So, first things first, I just want to start off by your career balance. You've got your main job, but you split that up, and there's two other entities that you represent. I want to start there. How do you pull that all together, and how do you keep it straight, sir?
You know, it's hard to do at times. It started out one at a time. I mean, they all came along kind of in different phases of my life. I started with the Taney County Ambulance right whenever I was getting out of college from C of O.
Oh, wow.
And I guess before that, I was on the Western Taney County Fire.
Okay.
I was a volunteer for them since 2017.
So when you got out of college, so how young were you when you got into volunteering and you first started this journey? How young were you?
So I got into the fire service in 2014.
In 2014,
I was a freshman in college at the Point Lookout Fire Department at College of the Ozarks.
Oh my gosh, and, so you just a young man.
Yeah, I was 18 years old.
Oh my gosh, that's a young age. I mean, and there's a lot of respect there at that age to go in and choose something as big as you did. Now, getting out of college, did you have a particular career path that you were studying for that might have taken you away from the emergency fields?
You know, going into college, I wanted to be a police officer.
Okay.
Back in high school, I was a police cadet for Springfield PD, and that's something I just had an interest in. And I'd never had any exposure to the fire service before getting to the college and seeing the campus department.
That is unreal. And see, Melissa, the cool thing is, too, our police chief, Eric Schmidt, and Ted Martin would both love to hear that story going back in time. And if they happen to listen to this episode, they're going to appreciate that. That's a big deal. And doesn't it kind of get you curious? I would ask you as well, just mom and dad, siblings, was there any influence? Do you have any service in your family, anybody that is with the police or with fire, to maybe kind of set you down that path?
Not a single one.
Not a single one. So what does your mom and dad do?
You know, my mom groomed dogs since she was, a little kid.
Oh, my gosh.
My dad's a counselor at a high school in Dallas, and he's counseled pretty much his entire life.
But nobody in the family was in the emergency sector.
All teachers, yeah.
That is unique, but they're both in respectable fields. They both work hard. For you, did you have any friends, any outside in your social circle that might have been a part of that influence.
You know, growing up, I really didn't. I didn't know anybody that was a fireman or a police officer. It's just something that, I mean, being a young kid, I thought was a really cool
job. Melissa, this is a first for us on this podcast series that you really didn't have any influence growing up, yeah, other than an enthusiasm, where whether it is maybe a story that you read or a book or possibly movies that you saw. You made a very, very big decision at a young age to go in this field with no outside influence. And I don't know, that to me says something about your character, your heart, and maybe a sense of fearlessness there. That's a big deal.
You know, becoming a police cadet, junior year of high school, I wanted to do it as something cool to do almost.
Yeah.
So I had no idea what that service was about, what they did and their day-to-day activities. And once getting familiar and meeting the people, it was just something that I enjoyed. And
yeah,
that was before I had any inkling about the fire service or what they did.
So, I mean, obviously we would jump from there to talk about cadet training and getting into the field, the police side of that, but also the fire training. You probably didn't have any idea what the training was going to be like unless you got some insight beforehand.
Yeah.
The training is not an easy thing to endure. It is a lot of hard work. There's a lot of hours out there, and there are basically training courses that are designed to test your mettle, mm-hmm, your level of fear, what you can tolerate and what you can handle. So I'm dying to know, going through all that, how did they push you, and how did they test you, and how did you handle it?
You know, it's kind of like almost militaristic in a way.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you look at the Navy SEALs where they have their Hell Week where they just get pushed to the brink.
Uh-huh.
And I'm not saying we did anything remotely close to that, because we didn't.
Yeah.
But, there's days where you're doing hard work and you have to keep on going through it, whether it's just being physical all day or, doing push-ups and sit-ups because you guys got in trouble. Or,
uh-huh.
It's just the whole job's a test.
Yeah.
And keeping going and not quitting is what kind of makes the guy stand out from other people.
Exactly, exactly. I mean, the grueling hours are one part of that, but they're going to push you. They're going to push your preparedness, your readiness level there to get you out there in the field. And here's the thing. We've talked about this in prior episodes, and Melissa will be hearing some of this for the very first time as she's new on the series. They cannot train you for every conceivable scenario out there. So when you get out there in the field, there's some things that you're ready for and you're prepared for mentally, mm-hmm, and stress-wise. But those firsts in your career, and I know that you probably had them, and we're going to get into that, they can't get you ready for every single thing out there.
Yeah, and that's what I love about the fire service. It's always different, and it allows you to think on your feet. I mean, mm-hmm, you have scenarios that, like I said, no one ever teaches you for, you've never heard about, you never trained for, but you have to come up with a solution for it.
Is the allure of the field, when you were just getting into it for the first time, did you have an allure there because of the challenge?
You know, I like challenges. I'm very competitive. I'm sure that was all part of it. And, you know, it's a place where you can have a sense of belonging.
Absolutely.
Becoming a part of that group, a part of that core, it's something that you can't find anywhere.
Yeah.
Or not many places, I should say, but the group and the family that you become a part of, in whether it's fire, EMS, or police, I mean, it's a kind of rare thing.
It's a brotherhood, and it's a sisterhood, because more females now are in the field now in fire service, mm-hmm, and in police, mm-hmm, which is bigger now than it ever has been. So these people become your extended family. When you're on the job, you rely on them for safety, and in many scenarios, as dangerous as it can get, your life is in their hands, and just as it is vice versa. I'm kind of jumping back and forth. I want to go back to mom and dad. You decide to go into this field. You're dabbling in police training, and then fire comes calling first thing.
Yeah.
These are dangerous professions. I'd love to know about the conversations you had with your parents when you sat down with them and you told them the first time, hey, this is what I'm looking at doing. What type of feedback and what response did you get from your parents when you had those conversations?
You know, they took it pretty well, I think. Honestly, my grandparents did a big part in raising me, and I think my granddad was more worried about anything than my parents were. It's one of those situations where he's like, don't tell me until after you're done.
Uh-huh.
I got to fly helicopters, for example. And
you fly helicopters, too?
Yeah, I'm a helicopter pilot. And I always wait till I'm back on the ground before I send him a message saying that, I had a flight and it went great. It makes him nervous beforehand. Some things, it's better just to do it and then kind of tell him afterwards.
A big part of this series, Melissa, is asking these questions and getting to know your background and how you grew up and those difficult conversations. You know, you hit us with something new that we were just focusing on fire, and we were just focusing on police and all the work that you do there. And now you just dropped on us that you get up there in a helicopter. And if you listen to the promos on the episode series, we talk about why do those people go into danger when other folks are running away. Mm-hmm. You have levels of danger in your life and your career and what you've dabbled into that are unparalleled to everybody else. Helicopters, that's not easy, and that is dangerous in its own right. So how did you get to be attached in helicopters? I want to know about that.
Yeah,
and talk
sure.
to me about the training. That's a big deal, and that's not easy either.
I always wanted to be a helicopter pilot. Looking at College of the Ozarks, I was before I was accepted there, I was dabbling around. Oh, maybe I want to go the military route because I wanted to become a helicopter pilot.
Yes.
And it didn't work out at the time because College of the Ozarks accepted me, and I went with that.
Uh-huh.
But once I was out of school and got working at the fire department for Branson, I was able to save up enough and get my private helicopter's license, working on my commercial rating right now. And
did you get it at College of the Ozarks?
No, I did it after I was out of the college.
Oh, my gosh. So the process itself, how long were you in training to get ready for this?
About a year.
Okay.
Yeah, just shy of a year. I needed 40 hours minimum of flight time, including solo time and time with an instructor.
Okay.
I think I ended up about 50-ish before I got my license, which is pretty common. I mean, no one ever really hits a 40-hour mark, but it's probably the most complicated piece of machinery I've ever operated because every arm and limb is on a control, and every action in one has a reaction in another.
Absolutely. So you put the time in for that. Now, I'm gonna bridge the two things together here. Now that you have gotten your training and you are certified, how has that impacted you, and how has that brought new scenarios into your life as far as working with the ambulance district, possibly, or emergency services and fire? I'm starting to think, and I'm going to ask that question about medical evac and everything and med flights as well. Has that qualified you for that, and have you done that so far?
Not yet. That's kind of the goal, maybe in the long run, is...
Okay.
You need almost 1,500 hours before you can become a medevac pilot.
So we got a ways to go.
It takes a long time to get there.
Wow.
But, you know, that's a goal for the horizon, I think, maybe one day. We'll just see how life takes me. And my wife and I right now have a lot of changes coming up in our life. We're going to be moving up to Kansas City, actually.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
That's a big move. How close are we to the move then for you both?
Mid-February.
Okay.
Yeah.
I always ask about the wives. Mm-hmm. I always ask about family and kids. So that's a natural segue for me to get into. I have to ask about this now. How long have you been married, and how has that adapted family life into your career? The uncertainty of going out the door each day, and how has your wife adapted to your choices in the field?
Yeah, so we got married this past September.
Congratulations! So this is a new marriage.
Yeah.
Wow.
Congratulations.
I like it.
Congratulations on that.
Yeah absolutely.
You. We've been married or together for about 6 years, though, so
Okay. She's
had exposure to what I do, to my schedule and my job. I mean, she's used to me just having to leave for calls that come in for the county fire department, as well as picking up shifts for TCAT or versus the fire.
Middle of the night or late. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, I mean, she's adapted really well to it. Some people have a struggle just because, especially on the fire department, being gone every third day.
It's a lot to take in.
It might be nice for some wives, depending on their husband, but for some, it's really hard.
Yeah.
So.
And it's got to be hard for her, the uncertainty of your schedule. And you probably, and this is one thing, and this is going to be a first. I've not really brought it up from this angle with any of the other episodes, and I'll get a chance to do this here. When you go out on a call, oftentimes, you know, it may be in the middle of the night. So it's a kiss on the forehead and you're out the door. Mm-hmm. And before she knows it, she wakes up and you're gone. Or you have a chance to say, hey, honey, I've got a call. I have to go out. And it's early in the morning. You're going into this uncertainty. And I've got to ask on this. When you go out on a call, you don't have a full picture given to you of the scenario. When you're going out the door, you are literally going into uncertainty. So you can't tell your wife everything that's going to be going on and what you can expect. She doesn't know, and you don't know. And it's the first time I've really framed it up that way for you. That's got to be challenging.
Yeah, most of the time you get an idea of kind of you're going to a medical or you're going to a car wreck. But, you know, the information that we get just varies on how well the person calling 911 gives it.
Exactly.
Because the dispatchers have to interpret that and then send it to us. Mm-hmm. And it's a hard job to do. So a lot of the times we just know kind of what we're going to like generalize. But mm-hmm. once you get there, I mean, it's just figuring it out and kind of sharing with whoever else is coming what you actually have. So.
So we're talking 3 months of a big transition. I mean, obviously marriage is one thing for you mm-hmm. in your home life, but 3 months of getting adjusted to everything together.
Yeah.
This is another life that is a part of yours now, and she's in this world for you. And that's one thing that I always like to frame up, because the spouses sacrifice in their own unique way.
Oh yeah.
She's right. Having to let you go, and she's having to say goodbye to you oftentimes multiple times in a day mm-hmm. on your busiest day.
I mean, that's the volunteer world.
Yeah.
I mean, mm-hmm. not to mention being gone every third day for my full time mm-hmm. job.
But yeah.
I'd say the other hard part for the spouse is it's not being gone for those, but I mean, your Christmas, your New Year's, birthdays, things yep. that you have to plan around that. I mean, if I'm working on Christmas Day or Christmas Eve and we need to go up to her family's Christmas, I mean, you got an entire family that has to plan around my schedule now.
Uh-huh.
And I mean,
have you been pulled away from family events since you've been working in the field?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, it'd be hard to find someone who hasn't, I think.
Oh, see, and that's Melissa, that's one thing that we don't often spotlight a lot. And I try to frame that up, because oftentimes, you know, we think about our property, or we think about an issue that is an inconvenience to us in our life. And oftentimes we get frustrated, and we don't think about the larger picture, which is also a basis of why we put this series together, because there are lives that are on the line in service to the community. Right. Mm-hmm. But it's not just our interruption. It's interruption to your lives as well. You have things going on in your life. There are things that you are coming from or going to or in the middle of, and that gets impacted.
Well, and I think you got to look at the guys and ladies that are doing this job.
Absolutely.
I mean, we all know that it comes with the territory. Mm-hmm. I mean, and most of the time, I think most spouses are very, I mean, they do well with realizing that he's going to have to go at times. And mm-hmm. I'm thankful for my wife, because she's very understanding about it.
Yeah.
But it's...
It takes a special woman.
It does,
to be in that, to be in that life and that kind of relationship. Mm-hmm. It really, really does take somebody special. I want you just to have a second, because I know that she'll be listening to this episode, probably listening to it right now or whenever she catches it. But is there anything that you'd like to say to her as a part of this piece, whether it is a thank you of why she's so important to you? I'd love you to take that opportunity if you'd like.
Yeah. So her name's Holly. You know, I guess the thing I'm most thankful for about her is I do a lot of crazy things, whether it's fly helicopters or scuba dive. And I mean, between my jobs, I mean, that are dangerous and kind of crazy at times. And she's never complained about it. She's always supportive and always had my back with kind of the adventures I want to go on and take. And not everyone would do that, especially if they're nervous about the job or, I mean, what you could be getting into. But she's been a pretty solid rock to lean on and have support from.
He's awesome. We're not even like all the way through this episode yet. That is very, very cool. I've asked this question several times over in past episodes, and I'd love to get your take on it and what you think about it. These jobs that you're in will push you and they will test you. So many different scenarios. On your most difficult day, what are the hours like for you? So what has been your longest day in the field, whether it's been with the ambulance or with fire? What has been one of your longest days?
You know, you have long days. Like, for example, yesterday, I just got off shift this morning. We had sub-zero temperatures and, I mean, just busy. I mean, not necessarily like hard days, but busy days where you've got sprinkler pipes busting all across the city. So you've got days where you run 40 calls a day throughout the department. So you have long days like that, but those aren't really the bad ones. I mean, mm-hmm. the ones that are the longest are where you have to do, I mean, go or see or do something that is just taxful on the brain and the body.
Yeah.
I mean, it could be a simple call that takes, just kind of wears you down for the entire day, and it could have only taken an hour mm-hmm. of your time. But it really just depends on kind of the whole job is very situational, and everything kind of gets tossed up in the air. But the longest days, there's the hardest calls days.
Well, and you threw out a number there, and you aren't kidding when you say 40 calls. Just take 40, for example, and you do the math and you split it up amongst the department and how many people are on that day. And that's going to give you an idea of why we need to be patient and why we need to be understanding. I want to ask you about that. That's a big number.
Mm-hmm.
from the most minute call that's basic that you see a lot of to the most challenging event. What I want to know, Dalton, if you would, at the end of the day, you come home and you have to be a husband. How do you best reset your mind and how best do you refresh yourself when you got to go from call six to call seven? See, the thing is, and the reason why I ask him those questions, call six has to be like call one. Mm-hmm. Call seven has to be like call one. How do you reset the table in your mind, but coming home to be a husband? That can't be easy.
You know, going from call to call, the way that I was, told long ago whenever I first got into the fire service was compassion, something that all first responders need to be able to show and deliver. So whether that's your going to pick up grandma for the seventh time that day.
Yes, yes.
You're right. It has to be like it's your first time and that you just woke up and you're ready to go. Mm-hmm. Coming home from the day, you know, it depends on the day. It depends on how your shift went. If you slept any that night, that also probably affects it. But the hardest times coming home are whenever you've had a hard call or something. Especially,
exactly.
It's not as big of a deal, I don't think, on the career side doing the full-time job, mm-hmm. as much as it is on the volunteer side. Because from the volunteer side, you go out, you do something, you see some stuff, and then you have to go straight home. You don't have that time to go back to the station with the guys. And
you can't decompress.
Yeah, it's just something that you just have to deal with. Mm-hmm. And for me, I'm fortunate. I've had a few of those where I go home and Holly just understands that I just need a little bit of space to mm-hmm. just clear my mind.
Yeah.
Like I said, it doesn't happen often. It's not like a everyday thing, but when it does, I'm thankful that she's able to, realize that and I don't have to say anything.
We talk about these stories facing down danger and addressing challenges. And you got into this field because you don't fear a challenge. You're okay with, I'm going to push myself. I want to test myself. Challenge. Okay, I'm going to get into this and I'm going to face down this challenge. Danger comes along with that. And I haven't brought it up too much so far through this series, but I do want to ask you about processing trauma because your field can be traumatic.
Yeah.
How do you personally face trauma and how do you process that and deal with it? It can't be easy to let some things go.
Yeah. No, you know, you've got your calls that stick with you. Mm-hmm. Most of the time though, when you have a traumatic experience or call, you're able to rely on your crew that was with you. Mm-hmm. Talking with them is a way to kind of get it out.
Yeah.
But we're really fortunate in this area that we've got support systems that, fantastic. Whether it's a critical, trauma response team that you can call. We've got guys on pretty much every department in the area that are all part of this team that you can reach out to if you're needing help or just need someone to talk to you. Because I can't talk to my wife about some of this stuff because she just doesn't need to know that it happens or it happened. But having these guys that are relatable to what you experience and what you do, it's a big, big benefit for the community.
I sit and wonder how you pick and choose. That's a gut instinct that you have. That's something different in your heart that you just know what you can and cannot share. Have you had to do that in the field with your brothers and sisters in the department, the people that you work with? Have you had to help them out?
Yeah, it's really a two-way street. You've got guys that, are the designated people, mm-hmm. but, my crew would be more comfortable talking to me, for example, if I was there on a call with them. You're closer to some people than you are others. That's just a natural fact of it. And depending on who it is, even if they're there with you or not, it kind of just influences who you want to talk to.
Yeah.
We've had some situations where we get done with a tough call and I've had people text me that I hadn't heard from or I wasn't super close with and just say, hey, just want to see how you're doing, check in on you. And I really appreciated that because I it was unexpected, but the fact that somebody cared enough to send me a message or send me a call, it meant a lot to me. So.
And you have had to see it, probably have heard it, depending upon the call or the situation. We talk about community impact. And we talk about the community's stress level with different scenarios. Mm-hmm. What has been the best part for you? Obviously, you're going to be moving soon, and that's a big transition for you. But since you've been settled in here and since you've served, what's been the best part of serving in the Branson area, the Tri-Lakes region? What's the best part of what you've gotten back from giving to this community and serving?
You know, support, really.
Yeah.
The community, from my experience, has been amazing with supporting us,
mm-hmm.
whether it's through a simple thing like a fire tax for helping build the new fire station,
yeah,
or them just coming up and like saying hi to us on the street or wanting to check out the fire truck or bringing goodies to the fire station on Christmas Day. I mean, there's a lot of good people out there that recognize that our job isn't the easiest, I'd say, and they're very supportive of it. So knowing that people care what you do, I mean, it makes you be able to do the job a little bit easier.
I got to know about the transition. I want to ask about that because we talked about it right when the episode first got started. You got a big move coming up. It's going to be a big move for both you and Holly. So have you prepared yourself and have you had a chance to scout as far as the field up there with fire? Larger area by far, and that brings a whole new set of challenges.
Mm-hmm.
So have you gotten a chance to go up and see where you're going to be and what's that going to be like for you? And how have you gotten ready personally for such a big change?
Yeah, so I got an offer from the Olathe Fire Department. So
okay.
That's
Olathe, kinda, Kansas.
Yeah.
That's a big spot.
So that's kind of where I'm, if it all plans out, that's where I'll end up. And I'm looking forward to that because department-wise, it's a huge department compared to here.
Yeah.
One shift of guys is our entire department worth of people back home. I mean, you got 9 stations versus 3 in dual company. I mean,
yeah.
5,000 calls versus 12,000 calls. I mean, it's a... it's kind of inconceivable without actually going up and doing it yet. But the thing I'm looking forward to is the opportunity to grow as a fireman because there's this more opportunity to, use your skills and learn.
Mm-hmm.
Bigger city, more exposure. And, it's something that's going to be changed for sure, but I'm excited for it.
Think about that, Melissa. 5,000 to 12,000, 3 to 9. By the numbers,
it might be
young man,
20,000.
I just, again, you talk about challenge and what drove you to get into the field.
Yeah.
You will be pushed and you will be tested. Now, see, for me, and you probably agree with me, Melissa, you go out and you see those movies, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think about Backdraft.
Absolutely.
I think about Ladder 49.
Oh, yeah.
And our mind just kind of dazzles and dances. We only get like a subjective view on TV and movies,
right.
and it's dramatized. But honestly, there are scenarios out there that are very, very real. I'd be curious, and I'm gonna ask Dalton, and Dalton, you can go as far into this with your response as you would want to, but it always comes up, and I think it helps us with perspective.
Mm-hmm.
I talked about your longest day
and
what that's like, and the call volume, and the number of times you're having to leave home. Now I have to ask you about your worst day, your most difficult day, and the scariest scenario that you have had to tend to. So again, elaborate as much as you want or your comfort level, but I'd love to know because it does help give us a frame of reference and perspective on your life and what you see.
Yeah, so, hardest days kind of vary because I've had a really hard day from having to take an old man into his house for hospice care that ended up passing away that night. Just because I was going through a lot with my grandparents and it was something relatable. So something as simple as that can just kind of get to you. But really the hardest day as far as like a job and the call would be, so I'm a public safety diver, so I dive, whether that's recover people that have gone down or things like that. And I say doing stuff underwater, it takes a very certain mindset. I mean, a person has to have, because when you're, 80 feet down and
you don't know what you're going to go into, it's pitch black.
Yeah. I mean, having to go down and just feel, hoping you find someone. I mean, that's kind of terrifying. Not going to lie, but it's something that I've kind of prepared myself for. I mean, we all do it in different ways. And each person has to be able to, just get through it if they want to be able to do that job.
Yeah.
So really the scuba diving, the being underwater in the pitch black, not being able to see, you just close your eyes and, go for it pretty much.
And now, on a dive rescue situation, how many of those have you had, if I can ask?
I think I've made 4 recoveries in the past 4 years, I guess. So about one a year, which we're really fortunate. It's not more than that with the lakes, but.
Yeah.
Oh,
and you just think about the sheer number of tourists and visitors that come through in the area.
Mm-hmm.
You are very, very lucky.
When those happen, they're never pretty. So that's the unfortunate part about it.
And when you say not pretty, that would lead to me to my next question. Again, elaborate as much as you feel comfortable doing. You talk about one a year, so a total of 4. Out of the 4, how many were successful? When I say successful, you save a life.
None.
Oh.
Okay. No, if they're underwater like that, the chance of saving a life, you've got like less than an hour window for it.
Oh, my gosh.
And by the time you get the call, you get there, you get your dive gear on, you get underwater, and you find them most of the time. Unless it's cold water, that can be an exception for it, mm-hmm. but most of the time your window's pretty much shot.
Have you done those recoveries in all conditions? And I say all conditions, you know, I'm talking about summer rescue mm-hmm. or winter rescues. Have you done them in all manner?
Yeah. I mean, being a public safety diver, all of us are dry suit certified, so we can dive in the coldest water up to, if it's summer, it's more comfortable, I guess. But
gosh. And see, his body of work, and we talk about challenges, you've not shied away from anything. And I think that's one of the things that sets you apart amongst the rest of the field out there. It seems to me, just from what I've gained and just getting to know you and talking to you about your life and your career choices, if there's a door open in the field, in the emergency sector, you've walked through it.
Yeah, you know, the job in itself is a very rewarding and exciting job.
Mm-hmm.
But there's sectors of it where you can just do a little bit more. So whether mm-hmm. that's being on the water rescue team, or we have like hazmat teams or technical rope teams. Olathe, for example, has a bomb squad, which I think would be really cool to be part of.
Wow.
I don't know how my wife feels about that, or definitely not my granddad.
Maybe
but
your wife.
Holly's going to listen to this. You may have some conversations on your hand.
Delete that part out.
I think our kind of persona for the entire first responder field, I mean, gravitates towards that kind of stuff. I mean, it's something that
uh-huh. It's a natural call, isn't it? Because every bit of thing that you can experience and try leads to service, mm-hmm. and you're connected to human life in one way or another.
Yeah, it'd be hard to do the job and not be.
Well, with everything that you experience and every decision you decide to take and door that you walk through, you're going to see something different. And there's something that is going to push you emotionally. It's going to pull on your heart. And it's going to be something that you may not be able to let go over a certain length of time. And it gets longer. So you've got to have a strong heart. You've got to have a steel backbone. I mean, that's all I can say to you. That is a lot to process. And thank God, I mean, you'd mentioned it and you're spot on right that we've got trauma response. We've got grief counseling. You're taking an old man into hospice care and he passes away. For rescues, and you think about the success side of that, and I asked you about that. You're bringing up victims, sadly.
Mm-hmm.
How you let that go, and you go to the next water rescue, or you hop on an ambulance, or you go to a fire, it's a lot. It really is a lot.
It all comes down to having a good support system.
Yeah.
I mean, having people that back you and or you're able to talk to about it. I mean, that's what lets you keep on going, I think.
Yeah.
And you're doing it for an important reason. If you don't go, like for the diving, for example, if you don't go get that person, then no one else will.
I had a conversation, and I'd love to just get your thoughts on it. And it's a reminder of how small, Melissa, the community is and how we're all tied together. Eric and Ted were both in, and we were talking about the Battle of the Badges that's going to be going on tomorrow, yeah. The 19th, depending on when you're listening to. This is going to be way down the road or way before. Here's the thing. For them, they both have family. We're talking kids mm-hmm. that have grown up and they're now in the police force or they're serving in fire. For you, when that time comes calling, and I haven't asked you this yet, do you have any kids, you and Holly?
Not yet. No.
When that comes up, how would you feel about that personally if your son or your daughter comes to you and says, Dad, I'm going to go in and serve? Can you predict what your response would be? This is future talk here for you, but I'd just love to get your thoughts on that. As a husband and a potential father down the road.
You know, I think I'd be proud.
Yeah.
I mean, I can look at my career and how much I've been able to give back to the community and make an impact. And, I mean, I'd be tickled to death if I had a child that would do the same thing.
Wow.
I mean, you look at firemen. Like, we had a fireman retire not long ago, Daryl Hember, and his boy works for us. I mean, they were able to work together.
Oh, my gosh.
How cool is that?
It's a source of pride as a father. You're working alongside your child, and they're coming up and they're having success. I mean, that type of feeling in its own right has got to be second to none. That's a big deal.
Yeah, I mean, it's look at generations that have. I mean, you got five generations in the fire service, and it's super cool.
Yeah.
But like I said, whether I have a kid and he does it, or she does it, or their kids do it, I mean, I don't know, but. I mean, it'd be cool to leave a legacy behind like that.
You could find yourself down the road being the grandpa imparting that that wisdom and that drive forward, that motivation.
Grandpa, we don't do it that way anymore.
Yeah, times have changed a little bit.
It has. It's in the name of the podcast series. I talk about heart. And I got to ask, because you probably have heard it at one call or another. If you haven't, you're going to at some point, especially with Olathe waiting in the wings. You get a chance to save a life, or you get a chance to protect property. If you found yourself in that scenario so far into your career, somebody looks at you and says, Dalton, you're my hero, or you saved my life. When you get that type of feedback from a community member, what does that mean to you personally? And if you could define it for us, what does it mean to you when somebody says, Dalton, you're a hero?
You know, I've been in the fire service since 2014. I've been full-time since 2018, and I haven't heard those exact words. But we don't need to. That's not why we do the job. Hearing it is a good reminder of like a thank you and that what we do matters. But I think if you were to take away all the, I mean, positive compliments and thank yous, you'd still have the same group of guys doing the same job.
See? And again, I think you can define it. That's why you're a hero. Mm-hmm. It is selfless service. You were interested in the field. You like a challenge. And this whole broad spectrum, full circle career was born. And it's a circle that's not closed off. That's a rare thing because it continues to evolve and enhance and grow bigger. And you're getting into more fields. It branches out. It's like, Your tree is not full. There are many, many limbs that are going to expand out of this tree. And it's impressive to hear because you're bettering yourself amongst the process. But boy, you're opening yourself up to so many different challenges. And some people would probably go and say, you know, yeah, I'm done. There's not much more I can see. For you, I don't think it doesn't sound like there's enough that you can see. And that's pretty cool.
Yeah, you know, it depends on... Depends on the day and what it is. Some things you see quite a few times, you're like, another one. But most of the time you get something new that's a challenge. But I think when it comes down to it, you look for a sense of purpose. Mm-hmm. And this job, the entire field has been able to provide that.
In the emergency sector, if I can pay you this compliment, it sounds like you're almost the Energizer Bunny, my friend.
I don't know about that.
And God love you for not getting tired of a challenge. I mean... That means a lot, and I can say that as a community member here. Thank you for making the choice to go in and push yourself and challenge yourself. And to Holly, when you're listening to this episode, thank you for giving up your husband. We don't often have the time as community members to say thank you to the husbands and wives that let their spouses go into the field to serve us every single day, because they are letting go what's most precious to them into uncertainty every day. Mm-hmm. And that needs to be recognized. And it's nice that we can be here face to face and I can say thank you to you. It means the world. It really does.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Thank you.
I want to wrap this episode up, and it's been amazing. And I told Dalton, once you get into this and you start talking, the time's going to fly by. And it has. But before we go, it's important to us that we keep the nominations going, because for Melissa and I, she's carrying on the tradition that Pam Yancey started. And it's important for Melissa and I, as we go through, to continue to get those nominations, because for us, it's like it's our work. We don't rest on our laurels because we have so many stories that deserve to be told and heard. And by process of me asking you this question, Dalton, for your fellow members out there in the field that are working tirelessly and putting in long days, saying goodbye to their spouses and going into uncertainty, they're not running away from danger. They're facing it head on, and they're making the community better every day. What would you most want to say to your brothers and your sisters in the emergency sector that's serving right now? What would you most want to say to them to encourage them to be nominated and come on this series so we can honor them and share their story?
You know, I guess the biggest thing I have to say to, I mean, all my coworkers and people that are in the same field, especially in our local area, is just like a thank you.
Yeah.
Because I wouldn't be the fireman I am today without them pouring into me. And I've had a lot of good support and people that just take the extra time to care a little bit more that have helped grow me into the fireman. And I mean, whether that's training or just being there, I mean, as friends or, you know, just stuff on the side, I've had a lot of support, and it's gonna be really hard to leave the people down here. But you know, I know I'll make more friends and stuff as I move up to Kansas City and in Olathe, but The people down here have, I mean, they've made me who I am. And leaving that behind, it's hard. But
the cool thing is, in saying that, we're very, very lucky that that journey for you started here in the Ozarks. Mm-hmm. We're blessed and lucky that we've had you as long as we've had. And Olathe is definitely going to be blessed and lucky once you settle in there and you start giving them your community service. It's going to be a very, very big deal. Melissa, I would love to give you the last word, young lady, in this episode, but it's been a lot to take in, a lot to process. Dalton has brought us just a remarkable life and a great, great story that is just, it's young. It's in its infancy, and he's got a lot more to do, and he's going to be pushing himself in a whole new area. But I'd love you to have the last word.
Absolutely. He's so driven, and I love that. But I want to say thank you so much for your service and your heart. I really appreciate that. But one thing, I did have a question that Josh kind of touched on is, I know that you wear several hats. So what do you do mentally, or do you have a regimen that you're like, oh, hey, I'm a firefighter today, or I'm a diver tomorrow? How do you change from hat to hat?
Yeah, so my full-time job at the Branson Fire Department, you know, that schedule is every third day. So I know these days per month, I'm committed to that department. But then anytime I'm off, you know, the volunteer department, Western is the next up pretty much, because there's no schedule for a volunteer department. The calls come in when they come, and whoever can go can go. So if I'm available to go, I mean, that's something that you just make that decision whenever it comes. As far as the ambulance, I was really fortunate to work with them part-time since 2017. And they helped grow my, I guess, medical expertise as an EMT phenomenally. Like, I wouldn't be care provider that I am today without them. And, you know, that's something that you just, I mean, you schedule it as you can, but there's also times whenever big events come out. Let's say a mass casualty incident occurred, and there's a car wreck, and there's lots of people. Then they'll send out a page saying, hey, we need all available people to respond in because this is going on. So really, the volunteer department's the hardest to juggle, because you never know. I mean, you could be eating dinner, or you could be coming home from the grocery store.
Sure.
It just happens when it happens, and you got to be ready to go.
Well, thank you for that.
Very, very, very good question. And that is a fitting wrap for this edition of the Heart of the Emergency Worker podcast series. We've been spending our time with Dalton Pennington, a great, great representative of the Ozarks, the Tri-Lakes area, representing Taney County Ambulance, Branson Fire, Western Taney County Fire, rescue diver. He is a chopper pilot, and just a wide and varied career. And we have benefited from all of that time that he has spent bettering himself. Dalton, thank you for being on this episode, and hopefully you'll have more people to think of for nominations, and we can have more stories to tell. We appreciate the time.
Oh, I've got some names.
Oh, definitely, definitely.
Yeah,
see,
thank you for having me.
That is the best part right
we like
there.
That.
For Josh Grisham and Melissa Box. Melissa, thank you for being on this episode, my dear.
I appreciate it. Thanks, Josh.
You bet. This is the Heart of the Emergency Worker podcast series. If you have a hero that you would like to nominate, we are ready to share the story. RVS Bank Cares, the Heart of the Emergency Worker podcast tab. The nomination form can be found right there at the top of the webpage, and of course, the episodes will be in order right below that, or you can visit any of your RVS Bank branches to do a nomination in person. This is the Heart of the Emergency Worker podcast series on Branson Podcast Network.